Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening, we'll talk about the current protests in Burundi. And with us tonight is Mr. John Manirakiza. He's a member of the Burundi diaspora in the United States. Mr. Manirakiza, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Douglas, for having me.
You're welcome. And joining us from the Burundian capital, Bujumbura, is Jean-Claude Nkundwa. He's a peace activist and is joining us by phone from the capital. Good evening, Mr. Nkundwa.
Good evening.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Thank you. And also joining us is Dr. Kara Jones. She's a political science professor at Mary Baldwin University here in Virginia. Good afternoon, Dr. Jones.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the show. As I said, our topic tonight is going to be the current protests in Burundi. Thousands of people, according to reports, have crossed from Burundi into neighboring Rwanda over the past week, fleeing intimidation by youth militia who are reportedly targeting rural areas as protests grip the capital of Bujumbura. This is all as a result of the president deciding to stand for a third term in June's presidential elections. Let me begin in Bujumbura with Jean-Claude. Tell us currently what's going on. How is the day like today?
Today has been a very different day comparing to other days. And today was the 50th day of protests, and what we observed that the protests were stronger than any other day. And this was shown by the fact that some other quarters like Kinanira and Kinindo, Kidenga, and Kinamada were not participating in the protests today, joined. And the other difference is that today it was a kind of violent day comparing to other days because the people of Kinama were seriously shot by the police, and police refused the Red Cross to go and rescue those who were injured. So, and what also we realized today is that right now there was an intelligence staff that shot a military who was part of the team of soldiers who were protecting the protesters, and the protesters captured them immediately because they were in a group of six, and handed them to the military before they burned down the car in which they were. So the fear increased in the town, and shops are still closed, and university students, they were chased out of the campus and went directly to the U.S. Embassy, and the embassy requested them to write a letter so that they can be accepted to maybe to have the exile. And it has been very attacked.
So you're suggesting that the protests are spreading beyond the capital Bujumbura to other parts of the country?
Not sure about that. Other part of the country, like Gitega and Muyinga, have tried to join the protest, but police cut down them immediately. But what I'm saying today is that there are some quarters in Bujumbura that were participating in the protest, but today they joined, like I say, Kinindo, Kinama, Kamenge, and Kidenga. Mm-hmm. These were not taking part in protests in the four last days.
I see. So, Mr. Manirakiza, hearing what's going on since Saturday, was this expected, you think?
Well, I would say that it was to be expected because it was announced earlier on that as soon as the president decides that he's going to run for a third term, people were going to go to the streets. That was known since last year when his minister of interior announced that Nkurunziza is going to run for a third term. So that from that time on, people told him that they were going to go to the streets. So this is not any surprise that the people are standing up and rising up.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Jones, given your knowledge of the country and this past history of instability and ethnic strife, how do you think this could have been allowed to go on? Because as my panelist here says, this was expected.
Yeah, I mean, protests are actually nothing new in Burundian politics, and I think my other distinguished panelists will back me up on this. And there have been lots of protests in the capital over the past few months for other reasons other than the third mandate. The third mandate is obviously what's driving these protests. But there's a lot of other issues that are important to realize. I mean, it's not just that the president is trying to run for what many perceive to be an illegal third term. It's also that the government has been cracking down on civil society recently. They've also increased taxes. They tried to give away the market to the Chinese. I mean, various other things that are all contributing to an environment of a lot of hostility between especially the urban people and the president.
And given this crackdown, you think the government may prevail?
Well, I mean, they're the government. So their chances of prevailing in terms of who can show the most force, of course, they're the state. They have the organs of power and violence. That being said, what has been really notable to me, and I would love to hear the other panelists speak to this as well, is how the opposition has reacted so far with nonviolence.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Nkunda, now you just what's your comment? Because are the protesters willing to go all the way to force change, as they claim?
Yeah, the instructions they have been given, especially by the civil society leaders, has been to come from their neighborhood and going to the commune center, and then once they come together, then they go to the downtown in a place that is known as a public place where people like meeting, and which is a significant in Burundi history. And the other instructions were that if you meet police on the street when marching and police resist you, to go to the downtown. Don't push. Just raise your hand, put your hand up, and if they refuse you, just sit down and stay nonviolent. But what we observed is that the protesters respected these instructions, but when police respond by tear gas and this water from a big car, then the protesters just react violently by throwing stones and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're observing also is that the military seems to be really accepted by protesters, and they like the instructions, but you can see that there's some kind of violence that is being observed because of the police reaction. So about the political leaders, it was yesterday that we saw them coming out. We were asking, where are they? Because these are the ones that mobilized these people. But they came out yesterday and they went encouraged the protesters and really marched in front of each of them. And we don't see any violent message they are sending, but there are some kind of violent activities when police respond by tear gas.
Mm-hmm. So, Manrakiza here. The crux of the matter is the protesters believe this is an unconstitutional term if Mr. Nkurunziza gets another term. And his supporters argue, we've talked about this, that the first term was actually he was not elected, he was appointed. So it's is there a way that this can be resolved short of this violence?
Yeah, I think the best way for resolving this is the president to decide to reconsider that idea of running for a third term.
Which is unlikely to happen.
It's unlikely, but he has to look at the interest of the whole nation. Because if, let's say, for instance, a country of 9 million people, now they have actually shut down the rest of the country from knowing what's going on in Bujumbura by allowing only their media, the public media, mm-hmm. and another private media owned by the party.
Mm-hmm.
To be the one broadcasting messages up country, and usually messages not of peace but of conflict.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so this is a dangerous game they are playing. It's almost throwing powder to the keg, because if something happened, there's no one to control the situation. So it will be best for the president to look at this situation and the context in which he finds himself. Because once again, we have been telling him the messages, to be a leader is not a right. to be a leader is a privilege. So if it's a privilege, allow the country to go forward with democracy rather than saying that you're the only person who can run the country. We have four ex-presidents sitting there who can tell that they've come, they've gone. Why would this one person decide that now, from now on, it's only him? Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense.
Dr. Jones, knowing of what you know, or in your opinion, do you think it's possible for Mr. Pierre Nkurunziza to sort of, people are calling for him to reconsider, to take the interest of the nation at first? Do you see that happening?
No, I do not. Given everything he said, and especially the statements by him and the first vice president in the last couple of days, I do not think that he will reconsider, and I think that this was always their intention from the beginning. And what's interesting is that, so there was a proposed amendment to the Constitution to change the term limits a couple years back. So while I do think that, and other researchers have agreed, that there might be some, how do you say, wiggle room in terms of determining the constitutionality of a third term. So this is a piece by Steph Van de Ginst, who's out of the University of Antwerp, that there may be some legality to actually running for a third term. I think that that moment has passed, and especially when you have already tried to, in the past, change the term limits, it means that you understand that this is most likely illegal. And especially now with the way that the government is responding to protesters, I think that there can be very little argument that the CNDD-FDD is very concerned that what they're doing is in fact going to be perceived as illegal by many, and of course the international community has already been all over this with lots of statements about, you know, respecting the Arusha Accords, respecting the constitutionality, respecting the will of the people. That being said, you know, I've studied the history of CNDD-FDD for a long time, and I can't say that them digging in their heels at this particular moment and fighting till the end is a surprise.
Yeah, Msankundwa, she talks about this party, ruling party, being prepared. Okay, it appears they are. Their layout on Saturday was well planned. The reaction use of force is not by accident. And then they have this group, the youth wing, the Imbonerakure youth wing, the militia. Tell us about something about that group, because most reports from there say these are very ruthless guys.
I had a time to really meet some of the human rights organizations that do research in the grassroots community to see who are these people and if they are, how they are portrayed. But what I'm finding is that these people are in some different categories. Those in Imbonerakure are not all radical or extremist as people think, but there are some of them, a part of them that has illusion of power because of the past of participating in armed group. These are the ones that understand that Pierre Nkurunziza can run, that no civilians can be in power anymore, and things like that. But there's another group of Imbonerakure who are like that are the group from the ruling party, CNDD-FDD, that are not really agreeing with the third term. And people need to consider that when they talk about CNDD-FDD, it's not all the party. It's a group of people, and a small group of people, because most of the majority of the CNDD-FDD people realize that this move of Pierre Nkurunziza is not going to work. And if it works, it's dangerous for the nation. And these are what people are saying, that, and you find opposition and people from the same party and civil society leaders, religious leaders agreeing on the on the wrong side of Pierre Nkurunziza and his other small team in his administration, and that small group of young people.
I see. So in that case, you think the Arusha Accord is thrown out of the window, it's gone? Because you can't have the two at the same time. You can't have the Arusha Accord and have this extension and then this violence.
Well, because they worked so hard for it. Remember, it took them the leadership and the strength of Nyerere, Julius Nyerere, who was no small person, Nelson Mandela, who was no small person, Bill Clinton, who was no small person. All these people came together and worked with them and said, look, this is the framework from which, from now on, you're going to be moving forward. Mm-hmm. The Wilson Woodrow Wilson Center here did train capacity building of the leaders in terms of consultative democracy. So they said, since you agree that the problem, the nature of the problem of Burundi is political with an ethnic aspect to it, let's bring the leaders and provide capacity for them to be able to engage in a permanent dialogue. That's what the Arusha Accord has been able to achieve in these last 10 years. So it was a different type of system that allow for everybody to participate. It's participative democracy. And to say that they are throwing it away, I think the people will not accept that.
Before we go for the break, Dr. Jones, your comment on the Arusha Accord and whether it can still hold after these events.
Yeah, I mean, the spirit of Arusha is enshrined in the Constitution. So if you're going to throw away the Arusha Accords or dismiss the Arusha Accords as not being relevant to the discussion we're having today about term limits, then you might as well just throw away the Constitution as well.
I see. Well, let's just take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of what's going on right now in Burundi.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.
Yes, welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the protest in Burundi provoked by President Pierre Nkurunziza's bid for a third term as president. And our panelists are Jean-Claude Nkundwa, a Burundi peace activist, joining us from Burundi. John Manarakiza, he's a member of the Burundi diaspora here in the U.S., and Dr. Kara Jones, political science professor at Mary Baldwin College in Virginia. Let me go to Bujumbura. There has been a lot of concern from the U.N. Secretary General. Ban Ki-moon has sent his envoy to the Great Lakes region. The U.S. Secretary of State for Democracy, for Human Rights and Labor, traveled to the country on Wednesday. Britain has urged and called for the peaceful resolution of this thing. Is this pressure building on the government, or do you think they can afford to ignore it? Mr. Nkundwa?
Yes.
Did you hear my question?
Yes. I think what I'm saying is that all these diplomatic initiatives are being ignored by the administration. And even today, we had a lot of diplomats from the United States and the African Union, and the response from the presidency are not really positive. And I think the international community will have to figure out other kind of interventions to really bring Bujumbura to rethink about the move they have taken.
I see. Dr. Jones, Burundi is one of the world's poorest countries, and it's heavily dependent on aid. Do you think the Nkurunziza government can afford to disregard the pressure from the West?
I think they can to an extent. So this actually happened with the arrest a couple of months back about Pierre Clavé Imbonipa. So when they arrested him, the EU threatened to take back 432 million euros. And this seemed to have actually spurred them into releasing him. Now, whether this will happen again is yet to be seen. I mean, in my estimation and research, CNDD has had a lot of years to collect a lot of money, so they could presumably keep themselves going for a while. I do think, though, that the West, and especially the EU and the U.S., need to be more severe in their threats and actually carry through with some of these conditionalities.
Mr. Nkunda, you said in one of your recent articles that international community wasn't doing enough for Burundi. What did you mean exactly?
Because I think there's a lot of protocols in the process. Because you have to start from last year when the UN cable was the one that published that weapon distribution is happening in Bujumbura, in Burundi, and you have civil society organizations that pushed for the international community to do investigations. And we came to this point that everyone was crying that the weapon distribution had been happening again and again and again. And there have been a lot of visits from Samantha Power, a lot of phone calls, even from Kim Moon. And you don't really see how there is any action that is being taken. And today, we came to the point where most of many Burundians are running away, and you have a lot of refugees in Rwanda, DRC, and Tanzania, and some actually are not known, and you have a lot of refugees also within the country. And we have radio stations that are being cut down, and with this experience of this country, for example, people will tell you that in 72, there were private radio that were cut off and systematic killings happened. And today the capital city is full of fear. Actually, the whole country is panicking. And international community continue just sending statements, visits only. And you wonder, when are they going to come and protect people? Because most of proofs have shown that the government of Burundi has taken all its power against a group of people. That's what you conclude, and you wonder what kind of actions that are being taken today. If you take the action of today, for example, when an intelligence staff shot a military, you wonder what's going to happen and what kind of emotions that are going to be among the soldiers, among the police, among the people, and you wonder what's being done just to stop these things. Okay, that would have meant that it's not enough. Actions are not enough.
I see. I, Mr. Manrakis, are you surprised that the pressure may be coming from the international community but not from the neighbors?
Yes, I'm very surprised and disappointed at the same time because this integration, regional integration, was meant to increase security for everybody.
Right.
So if one place is at risk of instability, it affects the rest of the region. As you can see, 20,000 Burundians have fled to Rwanda, up more than people. Rwanda... How many people Rwanda can afford to accept on the short term? Do they have a plan in place? International relief organizations are actually saying that there is a risk of up to 350,000 people being displaced, and the region will have to absorb that.
Mm-hmm.
So they have interest in preventing from the situation from escalating.
I see. Dr. Jones, some people find it very interesting in that Burundi's neighbors, Rwanda, they are soon coming to the same situation where they are debating whether Paul Kagame can have another term or not, although his term limited. In DR Congo, Kabila has been struggling with that idea of extending his stay. So maybe they are birds with the same feather. And secondly, there are those who are worried that this could spill into those countries. This conflict could spill into those countries. What's your take on that?
Right. I mean, well, term limits across Africa are kind of a sticky situation, right? We always have these ideas, and I mean we by, you know, the Western constitution writers who often come over to help write constitutions in Africa. And we say, you know, democracy needs a diaper change every X number of years or so, right? You can only stay in power for 10 years or two terms or whatever we decide. And then we come into this problem where many face challenges about term limits, and it's not just Central Africa, obviously it's East Africa and West Africa as well, and in the EAC in particular, so you have these new regimes who are going up against the term limits like DRC and Rwanda, and then you have Museveni, who's been in power for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how are these rulers of countries outside of Burundi making this decision and using this as a calculation to think about, okay, well, if we let Burundi exceed the term limits, then does that say something about ours, or what should we do? And I don't think that the answer is quite clear yet, because there are other things at play. So it's not just the political calculus of whether these term limit issues will spill over. It's also the conflict. It's also the refugees. It's also the proposed trade and travel plans being made. It's also, it's also that some of these guys were actually friends when they were rebels too.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think about that dimension as well. It's not an easy question to answer, and there are many who are actually against the third term in Burundi, but for the third term somewhere else. And this is a very, very complicated issue, and we'll see kind of how it plays out. I think it's more clear in Burundi that the term limit should expire.
Should expire. Mr. Nkunda, in the last 1 minute we have, how this is on ending? Do you see the protesters giving up? Do you see the government, the ruling party, compromising to find some solution?
Yes, I don't see protesters giving up. For example, we saw that today was going to be a day where they are tired and then maybe have like some few places where they protest, but it increased the pressure than any other days. And I don't expect Pierre Nkurunziza also going back on his word, considering the strong words that he said during the day he was nominated. And what I'm expecting now is there is not any intervention that is done, actually, because this is not that time of philosophy. This is time for protecting people, and in a national community should think about its responsibility to protect people. And if it doesn't happen, what will happen is this, that these Imbonerakure young people will confront the protesters, and the violence will start among people, and it will spread in all the country. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, this is a time of high tension. If there is any political authority who can die today, the country will be in trouble, and in the national community, we start then thinking what they should have done in the past, before that.
I see Dr. Jones in the last 20 seconds. How do you see it on ending up?
Yeah, it's not going to end well. But the things that can change it are strong conditionalities from the West and a more decisive AU presence in the country.
I see. And you see this the same way?
Well, yeah, but definitely the government is escalating it. You start seeing them calling this insurgency. That is a legal term to say that these are almost kind of a terrorist to start another crackdown to justify their position. And this is dangerous. The international community should do something to protect the people.
Something like what?
Well, I mean, they can pull the soldiers from Somalia, bring them back to Burundi to protect the people.
I see. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll revisit this situation as it goes on. Thanks very much. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. And we come to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. I'd like to thank my panel, John Manurakiza, a member of the Burundi diaspora in the U.S., Dr. Cara Jones, a political science professor at Mary Baldwin College in Virginia, and Jean-Claude Nkundwa, a peace activist in Burundi. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight was Jackson Mvunganyi. Our engineer was Abzaid Zahara. And we'll be back again next week for another edition of Reporters Roundtable. Just in case you missed any part of this program, you can still listen to it by just going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.